Morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Morning.
Good to see you guys.
Since it's Saturday and we're working towards cordialness, I thought we'd start off with something that is sort of undressing our voice or nakeding our voice. So it's just simple. We're gonna work with like M sounds and ah, and just switching back and forth. And I'll bring us through some changes as we go. But Aaron or Emma, you wanna with me? Just for the amount of time that I'm voicing it, so let's just do like one second for each.
I already messed it up.
It's not much to
there
mess
are no
up.
Wrongs.
Let's just switch back and forth between these fully voiced and ah, and we're gonna work towards pushing more breath out, but I'll start to cue that. So just allow it to be voiced, fully voiced at first. So on my lead. Now try to introduce a little bit more breath being pushed out as you're doing it. More breath. Not speeding up. Starting to feel it in the back of your throat. Losing some of the voice. Now introduce a gesture that's also something from your top of your torso, something that's also kind of evacuating. Not forgetting to breathe in. Right, let's take a few breaths. Sincerely yours. Yours very sincerely. Very sincerely yours. Always sincerely yours. Yours cordially. Cordially yours. Very cordially yours. Most cordially yours, faithfully yours, yours faithfully, very faithfully yours.
Unfaithfully yours.
Yours, very truly, very truly yours. Letters to intimate friends or relatives might close with any of these more familiar forms. Yours affectionately, affectionately yours, always affectionately yours, lovingly yours, your loving sister. Lovingly, your sister. With love, your sister. With affectionate love, your sister. With love. Always with love. With forever love.
Regarding our exercise about unwrapping and politeness and greetings, the writer Joy Hendry suggests that the Japanese have developed a wrapping culture in which polite speech is a kind of wrapping of thoughts and intentions and may help in wrapping others and exercise control upon them. This dimension of social life has its material counterpart in gift wrapping, in dressing in layers upon layers of garments, in constructions and gardens as wrapping of space, and in retinues of servants and officials as the wrapping of sorts for those wielding symbolic power. This layer of people shields them off from contact with the crowd. In fact, state formation is a process of social and spatial closure. The politics of wrapping bring us back to the material culture of containment. Joy Hendry writes of the Japanese form of politeness known as keigo, which is described as linguistic wrapping. And an appropriate use of keigo could help to persuade people to do something they may not otherwise have planned to do by making them feel good about it.
It is as if, then, the box were the object of the gift, not what it contains.
Do you want to talk a little bit about wrapping?
Yeah.
Are you going to do some wrapping?
I think... chat. Let's chat about wrapping.
Aaron, can you tell us a little bit about how you first came to thinking about rapping culture? Whenever I say rapping culture to anybody, I'm like, maybe it sounds differently than what we're talking about, but about Japanese rapping culture and your interest that first sparked it.
It's hard to say, but just thinking very generally about what we, I think, all have interest in, which is finding these material counterparts to something as abstract as language. We sort of, I think, culturally have this idea of language as this airy abstraction, but which for me has all these deeply material situations that are expressed and in, you know, everything from clothing to architecture, and just basic bodily practice. And it always comes back to bodily practice and how bodies relate to each other for me.
You're saying like architecture and clothing as extensions of the body.
As extensions of the body. And then...
as well as built environment. And
yes. Yeah. And once you've established that, you know, the sort of the types of relationships that they denote, the politics of it. And that's a big part of politeness. I mean, the politeness and politics have the same, you know, etymological root, you know, of control, basically. Mm. You know, related to control. And yeah, this Japanese conception of politeness as a way to not just to conceal your true intentions, but also to wrap influence around other people.
Mm.
Is
soft power, actually.
Yeah, very, very interesting to me.
It makes me think, like, the way that you're describing of architecture or clothing or the built environment as like an extension of the body, which we've all spoken about a bit. It makes me think of that actually the way that forms of politeness come about, or that language is sounded in a certain way, has to do with just the spatial organization of those elements. Like once you realize language to be just a set of extensions around us, then it's just the spatial arrangement that determines how it means anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe it's more akin to a dance. You know, nobody ever asks what the point of a dance is. Or what the point of a melody is. So yeah, sure, plenty of people do. But it's like, I've always envied these sort of admittedly contentless forms because all they do is arrange bodies. And nobody sort of like asks, well, what does it mean? You know, but people ask that of language and of art all the time. And, you know, or of architecture. And, you know, I think architecture being probably the most obvious example of how, like, you know, a physical construction dictates the relationships of bodies in a space and the movements of body through a space and the habits of bodies. mean, why can't we think of language and art the same way as sort of pointless, other than in showing us a relationship between things?
Mm.
And it begins in the womb. Hearing is the first sense to develop. So the womb being a kind of wrapping or an incubatory space wherein the voice is acousmatic or is occluded to the fetus contained within it. But then the voice of the mother is issued from the body and sort of heard through itself. And actually there have been some studies about how adopted babies sometimes have delayed language development because they've heard, if they've come, you know, from if they've heard different languages being spoken in the womb and then moved to another country when adopted.
But in what we're in what we're like starting to think about in terms of politeness, do you think that in that same way then politeness starts there because it's...
Yes.
Yeah?
I think so.
With any start of language?
Well, it's hard to say because I think politeness has... There is an implicit sort of jockeying, I think, to politeness that there is, in this conception of it in Japanese culture, it is a way to exert control or influence. That, you know, greetings, for example, are typically given first by an inferior in a relationship and expected by the superior, and there are often all these attempts to reverse that order in this game of politics surrounding politeness. So how does politeness exist between people who consider themselves equals or friends? You know, like we sit around this table and we all have things to say. It's like, how do you navigate politeness in settings where you're not trying to have a leg up? You know, what is the purpose of politeness in these sort of settings?
We're in the womb also.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Gesture.
Which might be more of a superior...
Gestural disturbances. Of yeah. A little leg being kicked. Is that...
Isn't... So I don't know the etymology, but I imagine like politics, like...
Polites.
Yeah, maybe it has to do with polis, right? Like the city, right?
The citizen.
Yes,
absolutely. A certain kind of citizenship. Yeah.
And it's so interesting that you say like a city, because Foucault refers to this very generally, these extensions of the human body as governmentalities.
Right.
He calls them governmentalities because it is way, ultimately, that an agent governs itself. Mm. And for a king, that meant a city was a governmentality, schools and roads, you know, were these extensions of his body and influence, you know, the way that Joy Hendry writes that people in positions of power sort of surround them, wrap themselves in layers of other people. And these considerations of governmentality can be anything as large as a city or as small as a wardrobe, you know. Simply a way that you
exist in space.
Govern yourself. Yes.
And exist in space.
And exist in space, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Just as a bivalve, you know, is a chalky wrapping for its fleshy dweller, the attached enclosed animal.
Yes.
Perhaps a form of governmentality.
Exactly. But like in the most interesting part of that is that it's ultimately a physical bodily thing, that things as like abstract as, you know, these incredibly complicated organizations of human life and government are, you know, for example, are like ultimately like about, they're just, they have deeply physical bodily sort of stakes.
Mm.
For whom? I don't know. I mean, in a democracy, ideally the people that make it up.
But the polis thing also is the city being a part of politeness or, you know, that being a part of one's citizenship or one's like social belonging. It does. I'm trying to think about it in contrast to, like, does the polis start in the womb or does the polis start once we are outside of a body and have to recognize other
bodies?
Well,
I think
the
womb is perhaps the ultimate form of hospitality. And so in that way, a fetus is, you know, nourished and fed by the rest of the circulatory parts of...
Don't you have to be polite to your host?
You are requested, perhaps, to stay, to not exit for approximately 9 months.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a, It's a government, is a literally using somebody else's body as you're rapping. But yeah, I think those senses of governmentalities expand and grow, and that's often what the, like, how we conceive of, you know, growth and maturity and language and art is to expand these limbs, the reach of our limbs.
It is difficult to refuse or say no. The key to the successful no is tact. In a letter of refusal, the goodwill of the reader must be retained, and if the letter is tactfully written, the reader's disappointment will be lessened. A customer receiving a flat no to a request for an adjustment will often not complain. He will quietly take his business elsewhere. The customer has bought a product or a service and now asks for an adjustment. He or she receives a rejection. The disappointment that started with the unsatisfactory product or service deepens in his distrust and then anger. Into distrust and then anger. This lost goodwill must be salvaged. The writer's task is to explain the rejection in a tactful way and to offer an alternative. He or she must combine the refusal with help for the customer. This will not please the customer all of the time, but the chances of alienating the customer all the time are considerably lessened. One good way to start a letter of refusal is to agree with the reader on some point. This establishes a feeling of working together as opposed to I'm right, you're wrong confrontation. For example, we agree that a watch running only part of the time is useless. As you requested, we are enclosing a tally of the monthly purchases you made during 1946. Your junior Chamber of Commerce sports annual is a commendable project. A copy of the first quarter of 1946 issue of Semiconductor Science is being mailed to you today. We like your approach to the consumer survey on garden tools. Your questions are most interesting. The next step is to state the refusal. The reader has been prepared by the explanation, and there is no reason to smother the refusal in a barrage of words. A few examples. I regret that we must decline the opportunity to help the girls' club. I am sorry to inform you that we cannot supply the information requested. We hate to say no to your credit application, but we do not have enough information to say yes. Other direct but polite statements of refusal include these.
Elegance is refusal.
At present, however, your financial condition does not quite meet Barrow's requirements. He believes that meeting would not be helpful. We do not have a position open that fits your qualifications. I am sorry that we cannot accept the chairs for credit. I am sorry we cannot provide the information you requested. We hate to decline granting you credit, but we need additional information from you. Encouragement. Because the ending of a letter is the most emphatic position, a tactful letter of refusal should end on a positive or upbeat note. Consideration for the reader suggests that a sincere effort to offer at least some help or encouragement would be appropriate in offsetting the unavoidable disappointment. This helps the reader to save face, gives him or her an out, offers an alternative course of action, and re-inflates the reader's ego. Closing statements like the following are encouraged. We wish you great success. We are interested mm-hmm. in your business venture. Please keep us in mind for other ideas you may develop. Many adjectives can be used to describe the proper tone of a letter refusing a request, but they are all brought together when the writer uses the persuasive power of a soft denial. Thank you for thinking of Carl and Henderson. I know you will find a suitable position soon. I believe the Lehman Company could give you a more detailed information. Have you thought of asking Tom Anderson? We will be glad to receive other ideas from you. We are interested in your proposed new business. We wish you great success. We wish you continued success.
It's interesting, this manipulation of or sculpturing of feelings. Yeah. And that the question of politeness is also one of tone.
Yeah, tact.
Yeah, and adding, dropping in just enough of a slight floral quality, which makes me think of flower language, when the tradition of sending bouquets of flowers when it was widely known that certain flowers had particular meanings. And so it was a way to sort of not write, but to message someone.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, why is it that beyond a world of sales, like of trying to get somebody else to buy something or make sure that they don't, you know, blacklist your company or something, what is the, why do you need to reinflate someone else's ego, you know, when you're writing a letter of refusal to someone?
It's slightly like the antithesis of a Japanese wrapped package, which feels
really
to diminish that which is contained within it. The object, the message, is so wrapped. And
can you explain that more? I'm trying to follow. So you see it as you see the fact of like inflating someone's ego in a letter of refusal, as opposed to
as a particularly Western form of hyperbole, probably.
I mean,
different, yeah, to this sort of staging of a void, as happens in a Japanese wrapped.
Well, I like the idea package of wrapping in politeness as like a way to make. I mean, as this writer Joy Hendry said, as just like a way to make people feel good about doing something when they don't actually. And that in the context of politeness, I'm trying to figure out a way to articulate it.
It is a little like a riddle. It's been a fun thought form to engage with. I mean, wrapping as a motif, not unrelated to say folding or knots, and actually the etymology. Let me just find it.
A paper by Raymond Firth includes a strong argument for considering greeting and parting behavior in general as a type of ritual because of its patterned routines. It is a system of signs that convey other than overt messages. It is sanctioned by strong expressions of moral approval, and it has adaptive value in facilitating social relations. Such assertions may be tested quite easily by anyone who has the courage or temerity to try interfering with socially sanctioned greetings, and then gauge the effect this interference has on their associates. Just such an experiment was carried out by the linguist Charles Ferguson, who simply failed to reply to the good morning greetings of his secretary for a few days. The terrible effect he reports on the office indicates something of the power of a greeting.
Rap, verb, early 14th century, rappen, for to wind, something around something else, cover something, conceal, bind up, swaddle, fold something up or back on itself, of uncertain origin, perhaps via Scandinavian, compare Danish dialectical vravel, to wind, from verb, turn, wind, to turn, bend, or perhaps a variant of lap, to wrap up, put an end to, is from 1926.
A detailed example of this last function of greetings is Irvine's analysis of Wolof greetings as strategies of social status manipulation. She makes the important point that the person who initiates a greeting, very often a long series of fixed exchanges, is putting themselves into an inferior position to that of the person addressed. If two people catch sight of each other, they are also under an obligation to greet, so adjustments of this sort are being made continually in Wolof society. The advantage, however, of getting one's greeting in first is that a superior is obliged to respond positively to requests of various sorts from an inferior. There may thus be attempts during the course of the exchange to reverse the order suggested at the outset.
Hide the ideas, but so that people find them. The most important will be the most hidden.
Let's do some wrapping between the three of us. I mean, actual, like, paper wrapping.
Yeah.
Maybe we can just... let's do this. Can one of you... maybe the three of us are involved. Let's see. I'd like maybe one of us to actually do the wrapping, wrap something here, and for our listeners to try to follow along. So let's just stick with like an A4 piece of paper or sets of paper. Maybe Aaron, you can watch Emma and I. Maybe Emma and I will like sort of be in sync with what we decide to do with the paper, and you can describe in detail what's going on, how we're doing it.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So watching us. I need to make space in front of me. So, yeah, make space in front of yourself.
So, they're moving their computers.
The first question is, do we require an object?
Oh, you have a Tonizaki book there?
I do. I have in front of me the In Praise of Shadows.
Oh, I love that one.
Which begins by thinking about the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
In the Japanese house.
Here, he calls it the morning glory poop. The first poop of the morning. The weirdest, like...
introduction to a book ever.
Yeah. I don't know why that sticks out in my memory, but I guess Tonizaki really liked pooping.
Yeah. Seems like it. And naked light bulbs. I think that's a good first question. Do we need an object or not? So first of all, what we do need is an A4 piece of paper, because I think that would probably be the most readily available. Although... it is Saturday, so maybe people are further away from A4s than normal.
I did bring spinnaker sailcloth if we...
Oh, yeah. But that's for something else, no?
Could be. Yeah. Okay, we'll stick to A4.
A4.
Let's be standard.
Let's be standard with everybody else. All right, and then I'll be... So we have an object. Let's start with using an object. I have an object that already looks like it's too big, but I'm going to try... How do you feel about your object?
Again, at the edges of being...
too big.
Too big, but...
but attemptable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are these books. One is the correct letter writing book that Tim has been drawing from, and then the other is the Junichiro Tanizaki In Praise of Shadows, which is a wonderful discussion of concealment and obscurity in aesthetic and philosophy in Japanese culture.
I can't see you, Emma. There we go.
They're wrapping their books with triangular flaps from the A4 paper. But the interesting nature of these, and relevant nature of these books they're wrapping, is sort of interesting to consider in the difference between Western and Japanese gift giving. In Japanese gift giving, it is often not common to give a gift of sentimental value or of personal relevance. It is more appropriate to give a gift of appropriate value. They're continuing to conceal these books. The paper isn't large enough. You can still see what's in it. Tim's book is a lot thicker than Emma's. But Emma's wrapping is a lot cleaner than Tim's. Now the books are both wrapped up on the table. They're just white rectangles. And Tim just took my book and is going to wrap it in another piece of paper. Don't let me forget that. Emma's going to wrap her phone, which seems like a much more appropriate size for the A4 paper.
I recommend doing this. A4 paper was made to wrap iPhones with.
It's kind of a handsome form. Unlike the book, which requires these sharp edges, the tablet shape of the phone with its rounded corners lends itself to paper being folded around it.
If anyone's listening, try to dial my phone. Maybe it'll vibrate through the paper. 301-281-3082.
Tim is continuing to try and wrap my book, which is far too large for the piece of paper. In fact, the paper only covers the sides of the book. Tim's microphone is right down by the book, so you can hear all the paper moving around. He's folding my book. Emma's creating nice little triangle ends for her package of her phone. We don't have any tape, so all this wrapping is sort of coming undone, and Tim seems like he's getting frustrated trying to figure out a way to close up my book. Emma's phone is a neat little package right now. Tim's attempting to use paper more like aluminum foil. Sort of crumpled up around my book. And Emma's wrapping up a pen now. Rolling it up like a, some sort of...
cigarette.
Yes.
The chic of cigarettes is in the paper.
Yes. Nice to see you guys.
Pleasure.
After you, actually.
Oh, thank you.
No, after you.
Yeah, I'm very preoccupied by the use of politeness among friends. There's a great anecdote I always return to about certain East Asian cultures where what's perceived as rudeness by Westerners, you know, as in, you know, bumping into one another, not saying please or thank you, is actually in many settings a sign of intimacy. That when you are close to others, far from treating them like, you know, a stranger that you have to control with politeness and influence, you treat them the way you might yourself. You wouldn't ask yourself to please pass the salt or to say excuse me for bumping into yourself. And that this sort of lack of politeness is a mark of intimacy. Mm-hmm. So what does the role of politeness have between people who are close?
Does it get in the way?
Yes. Why would, if we're conceiving of politeness as a concealing of intentions and an attempt to wrap other people in influence, what role does it have when you are with people who are, you know, with whom you are as one?
Well, I think that maybe similarly related is to ask, like, what kinds of, can we think of anything that's a form of politeness for ourselves. Like, what forms of politeness do we impose
showering. Towards
ourselves? Yeah, for example.
Exactly.
Right?
Toilette, you know, the regime.
Hygiene.
But I think you have to ask towards what end. You know, are you attempting to control yourself or manipulate yourself, or are you merely showing an act of kindness? And there, you know, you sort of find a distinction between politeness and kindness. That kindness is, politeness is, it seems to be more towards an end of control or social order.
Politeness is not kindness.
Politeness, yes. And that kindness is more the, I don't know, gesture of affection.
Politeness in its ineffable form, that which is less. How can I say?
Less effable.
Yes.
Yeah?
Less regimented. Not regimented.
Fletcher? Can I get some sound here? We hope our caring will make your sorrow easier to bear. We hope that time will ease the sorrow of your recent loss. We know that memories will keep your lost ones close to you. May our sympathy help to comfort you. May you find comfort in knowing that we care. Our thoughts are with you in this time of sorrow. We wish to express our deepest sympathy. May the love you feel for the one you lost lessen your sorrow. May the love that surrounds you be a source of comfort at this time. May your memories be a source of comfort. It may help to know that our thoughts are with you. May the sympathy of those who care make the sorrow of your heart less difficult to bear. Some things are hard to understand. No one is ever ready for death. We know death is certain, yet it remains hard to accept. Those who have not experienced the death of a close one cannot comprehend the loneliness. There is an emptiness that only those who have lost a close relative can understand. Our sympathy and love go out to you.
The live skin of the globe is peeled, the dynamic mantle stripped bare to expose the membrane of grids and coordinates down to the core of gravitational mass, the nucleus. At this point, elusive processes and invisible structures begin to emerge. Longitude and latitude lines are unraveled to form networks of consciousness on new levels of awareness. The remaining points of intersections are cut, and the continents allowed to drift. From isometric systems and isotropic space map projections, study of distortions, Agnes Dennis, 1976.
I like that for Tonizaki. Concealment is not just necessarily about politics, but a sort of aesthetic imperative.
Can you explain?
So his book, In Praise of Shadows, is sort of this landmark articulation of this Japanese philosophy's, you know, surrounding
spatial dark philosophy.
Yeah, not just Japanese, spatial. I mean, but that darkness and concealment and obscurity were the stuff of beauty that
facilitate aesthetic experience.
Yeah, facilitate aesthetic experience, and that illumination was sort of vulgar in a certain way, and that these excessive wrappings of clothing that concealed the true bodily form and deep layerings of makeup and seen in dramatic low light was far more attractive than what we call this sort of just pornographic total exposure. And it's interesting to sort of ask what role politeness has among people who aren't actually trying to exert control over one another, and that possibly it is just a requirement for beauty or aesthetic experience.
It made me think of Basho, actually, and I brought a haiku. Guests shadow through the paper screen. I sit dreaming over charcoal fumes. How pleasant just once not to see Fuji through mist.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, just sort of thinking about what's at stake with concealment in those sort of in these settings, with aesthetic considerations, is that it leaves so much up to the imagination. Is that, you know, like maybe these things aren't trying to exert influence over you, but it creates an opportunity to imagine or to wonder, whereas total knowledge or total understanding is maybe just crude and boring.
Right, and it invites us on a passage.
Yeah.
Towards something.
Yeah.
Let's try redressing the voice.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's start with, let's go back to those sounds we ended up with at the beginning, which were, you know, sort of unvoiced.
The undressings.
Can I get that? So out your nose. And it's still actually the kind of N sound and the ah, but it's actually just sort of using more of the back of your throat, one channeling it through your nose and the other through your mouth. So we're gonna try to slowly move from that towards the so that's the place we're going, right? Maybe just sound that so you feel that in your body. Now go to that. Now back. Now let's try to go on moving slowly from one to the other. What do you have to change? What do you have to take away and what do you have to put there?
You have to add breath. And exert.
How do we continue to dress up the voice? So to speak.
Japanese rapping is like a physics of the voice.
Able, absolute, advantage, brilliant, confidence, controlled, delighted, detailed, different, economical, effective,
impelling,
electronic,
insight,
emphasis, expert,
extensive,
no,
fact,
largest,
fair,
largest,
flare,
latest,
free,
scientific,
lowest cost,
guarantee,
money maker,
hard shell,
sell,
help,
hard shell,
immediate,
now,
compelling, insight,
powerful,
instant, no, largest, latest,
super,
low cost,
value,
money making,
successful,
new,
stunning,
now,
oldest,
satisfaction,
persuasive, powerful,
fair,
professional,
value,
proved,
volume,
quality,
results,
quickly,
you,
results,
satisfaction,
yours, scientific, solved,
brilliant,
stunning,
sell,
successful,
guaranteed,
super, today,
immediate,
tremendous, value,
largest,
volumes, you,
powerful,
yours,
yours,
professional,
words to use to give others the feeling that they have power
during a sale.
Here's an advertising expert's checklist guide to what people want. The advantages they are most interested in gaining. One of these should be the basic appeal of your sales letter, whether you are selling a bar of soap or a Steinway piano. Number one. Are you want to read them, Aaron?
Yes. Number one, better health. Two, more money. Three, greater popularity. Four, improved appearance. Five, security in old age. Six, praise from others. Seven, more comfort. Eight, more leisure. Nine, pride of accomplishment. 10, business advancement. 11, social advancement. 12, increased enjoyment from food, drink, entertainment, etc.
According to the same excellent source, people also want to
be good parents, have influence over others, be sociable, hospitable, be gregarious, express their personalities, resist domination by others, satisfy their curiosity, be up to date, emulate the admirable, appreciate beauty, be proud of their possessions, be creative, acquire or collect things, be efficient, win others' affection, be first in things, improve themselves mentally, be recognized as authorities. Cosmetics and the art of adornment are equivalent expressions. The Greeks, in their exquisite wisdom, combined order and adornment in the same word, the art of adorning and that of ordering. Cosmos designates arrangement, harmony, and law, the rightness of things. Here is the world, earth and sky, but also decoration, embellishment, or ornamentation. Nothing goes as deep as decoration. Nothing goes further than the skin. Ornamentation is as vast as the world. Cosmos and cosmetics, appearance and essence, have the same origin. Adornment equals order, and embellishment is equivalent to law. The world appears ordered at whatever level we consider phenomena. Every veil is a magnificently historiated display.
So start off with somebody else's hand and your own hand touching on the back of your hands. So find somebody, whoever is near you. Hopefully someone's near you. If not, maybe use the cold.
Human or non-human.
Yeah, use the cold of a wall. Maybe your computer. Maybe your radio. Whatever you have with you. So place your backs of your hands against each other. Now, orient your both of your hands so that your fingers are faced the same direction. And that you can start to feel your fingernails on their fingernails sliding, kind of slipping around, trying to steady themselves, nail against nail. And as we are here, you know, leave your thumb raised up, or you can have your fingers all pointed up towards the ceiling. Now, I want you to slowly sort of look at the place where your fingernails are meeting. And this is going to take quite a bit of focus. I want you to treat that as a little hinge. And you're going to turn around, slowly hinging.
Until your fingertips are pointing towards one another.
Yeah, and pause where your fingertips are pointing at each other. So maybe now just what is that, Emma? Your middle finger and your ring fingers are touching. If you can get the other parts, all the better. But you want to be, you know, in a line, pointing.
Meridian.
And continue to hinge over. Slowly paying attention to what's happening to the rest of your body when you do that.
Sending your palms toward each other.
Sending your palms towards each other. And pausing just before your palms touch. And see now, with this hinge, or maybe you've sort of regrounded yourself on those five fingers, your five fingers, on the soft of their five fingers. See how close you can bring your palm and the heat of your palm towards the heat of their palm. And when you start to sense the heat emanating, circling around as this little ball between your two palms, nested between your two palms, and now we're going to continue a hinge. We're going to take the base of our palm, the hard part, and treat it as a second hinge. So re-meet that person.
Getting a cramp. Their
Aaron's getting a cramp. We're reaching kind of far here. Try to treat the base of the palm. Find the base of the palm of that person, the cold part of the palm, not the heat, sweaty part. At least mine are hot and sweaty. But the base of the palm.
Hands are damp.
My hands are very damp. They're always damp.
Emma's hand is dry.
My hands are damp. Find the dry part
of my palm.
How
impolite.
Yeah, you better get on that.
And use that as a hinge to then meet your elbows. Slowly trying to get towards your elbows.
That other hinge.
I don't know if it's going to happen.
The three of us are together folding up like a flower. And release your hands so you're just on the slippery of your elbows, just like the slippery of the back of your fingernails. Depending on each other, but sliding around on the cold of your elbows. And try to use that as another pivot if you're just with two people. I don't think we can do this with three. But if you're just two people, use that as another pivot to bring yourselves to face back to back. I'm with Emma now. So use your elbow as a way of pivoting and facing back to back. And then slowly part just by reaching down to the floor on your own, maybe bumping butts.
Make sure you say excuse me.
Excuse me.
There's any untoward contact. Depends on how well you know the person.
An Emily Dickinson envelope poem. Had we our senses, though, but perhaps 'tis well they're not at home, so intimate with madness. He's liable with them that's 'tis, had we the eyes within our heads prudent, how well that we are blind, we could not look upon the earth, world so utterly unmoved, written on a fragment.
Without you, I wouldn't have known where to turn for the endless number of decisions one must make in a time of grief. You were such a comfort to us following Edward's death. John always thought of you as a real friend, and that you proved to be during my period of grief. How much I appreciated your kindness and help when Alexander died. I just couldn't have managed without your help. The letter you sent at the time of Andy's death continues to be an inspiration to me. Thank you for your kind words and your understanding heart. Your kindness overcame the self-pity I was beginning to feel. Your words of encouragement stayed with me during my bereavement. Thank you for your understanding and sympathy. Your love and help during my recent difficulty have meant more than words can express. We wish to thank you for your kind thoughts. My husband and I wish to thank you for your kind thoughts. We wish to thank you for your letter. The kind messages sent by friends have been a great comfort to us. We appreciate your thoughts of us and your sympathetic note. We appreciate your kindness in writing to us at this time. We gratefully acknowledge your kind expression of sympathy. We appreciated your sympathy in our bereavement. We thank you for your kindness and sympathy. Your note of sympathy helped me to accept Tom's death more courageously. Your sharing of your recent sorrow helped me to bear my present bereavement. Thank you. It is a comfort in a time of sadness to receive such a beautiful expression of sympathy. Thank you for your kind expression.
She called me to her side. She said, son, take time to know her. It's not an order.